This seminar considers the traditional topics dealt with in the introductory part of comparative law classes, such as the definition, uses, and purpose of comparative law, its place in harmonization, and its methodology. In this seminar, we try to attempt to understand the changing nature of comparative law, the process of comparization, and problems connected to intra-culture and cross-culture comparisons. During the past decade, we have witnessed increasing interest in all forms of comparative law, of international law, and transnational law. The character, quality, and quantity of work have increased and changed, but the basic problems have remained the same. There is no one definition of what comparative law and comparative method are, while there is a concern with justifying the practical utility of comparative law, making its subject matter manageable and avoiding superficiality. We will put the emphasis in regarding comparative law as a neutral place where we can study different types of scholarship. Comparative law, as we know it today, can be regarded as a child of the 19th century that has reached its mature age in the 20th century. During this period, a century, the subject seems to have given comparative lawyers total freedom and provide them with the seemingly endless pastime of discussing its true meaning, its historical development, its dangers, its virtues, scope, and the objectives. Objectives as varied as adding law reform and policy development, providing a tool of research to reach an universal theory of law, giving a critical perspective to students, and added to international law practices, facilitating international unification and harmonization of laws, helping courts to fill gaps in the law, and even working towards the furthering of world peace and tolerance have been attributed to comparative law. These objectives can be grouped as practical, sociological, political, and pedagogic. In addition, we see such terms as, and I quote, traditional comparative law, mainstream comparative law, convention comparative law, critical comparative law, and postmodern comparative law being used by different scholars in different moments, in different contexts. One thing is certain. There is a growing interest in comparative law. There are a number of new journals with comparative law in their titles. The number of scholar articles with a comparative element published in these journals is multiplied within the past 10 years, and it has become indispensable for all doctoral researchers, for all courts and judges and legislators to consult foreign material as a matter of routine. For a long time, it looked as though comparative law was a matter for academic research, a difficult matter, very interesting, beautiful to know, but not immediately relevant to the daily life of law. But Over the last 10 or 15 years, the legal climate seems to be changing. This evolution may be influenced by the process of European integration. It may also result from the fact that we are living closer together on this global village situation. It may finally be an autonomous process brought upon by the lawyer's search for fresh perspectives, in particular when completely new legal problems are to be solved. Although Gatterich, a scholar we are going to quote many times over the next 9 months, once observed that, and I quote, "The essential problem is not what is comparative law. The question of real importance is what is its purpose." Most works on comparative law start with the question, what is comparative law? And then the scholars, these works, attempt to define it. One rather circular, vague, and open-ended definition, but a very popular one, tells us, for instance, that the word suggests an intellectual activity with law as its object and comparison as its process. Also, comparative law sometimes is referred to as an incomplete theme that is just opposing, contrasting, and comparing of the legal systems or parts of those legal systems, therefore with the aim of finding similarities and differences. However, the definition can be much wider than that. Comparative law is a science of knowledge with its own separate sphere, an independent science producing theoretical work. Comparative law can be thus regarded as the critical method of legal science. Indeed, comparative law is a very broad field, and the fruits of comparative study can be put to many uses. Yet, it cannot be justified by its use objectives alone, as Rodolfo Sacco points out, and I quote Sacco from his work of 1991. The use to which scientific ideas are put affects neither the definition of science nor the validity of its conclusions. We know that the everyday process of thinking involves the making of a series of comparisons. So we see that the comparison is involved in all methods of scholar investigation, not only of comparative law. Looking at the world of law and the environment in which it lives, comparative law can provide knowledge about law as rules, about law in context, and about law as culture, thus enabling us to have comprehensive and in-depth knowledge of the legal phenomena and their interactions in society. Comparative law draws from the pool of models to illustrate the general points of its making. Like legal theory, legal history, and legal sociology, it brings additional perspectives, although it said that traditional comparative law has failed by paying insufficient attention to context and ignoring the context of the production of ideas. Traditional law doctrine engages in comparative law through the law as rules approach. This bears the prejudices of positivism and of national legal cultures. It's important to regard comparative law as an indispensable international component of what the French call la culture juridique.